View with Dr. Lou Campomenosi, president of the Common Sense Campaign and adjunct professor of political science at Spring Hill College. This program is paid for by Spriggs Enterprises, including the Shell gas stations in Daphne and in Malbus with a state-of-the-art car wash. And good morning, Dr. Lou.
Good morning, Laurie. How are you doing?
Great, thank you.
It's so nice to see you once again. And Mark's back. He's all well. So that was a really good treat to see Mark.
Yes.
All right. So now that we've concluded our opening remarks here, I do want everyone to understand that the things that we've been talking about the last few months, the border crisis, inflation, all of these issues that we continue to talk about are certainly critical. And I'm going to talk a little bit more about them in a bit. But one of the things that I think is important, very important, is this whole question of election integrity. We've talked about it before, okay? But what I wanted to do this morning was to bring in Secretary of State John Merrill, who was with us at a really good meeting last Monday night at the original Oyster House. We had about 45 people there. We filled up our room, and we had a two-hour discussion from the secretary. So my feeling is, based on some of the things that we talked about last Monday, we should do a follow-up, okay? And so that's why I wanted to bring him on this morning, and I'm going to bring him on in just a few minutes when I get finished with this short opening monologue. And I say short because I want to give as much time as I can to the secretary, because there are questions about what has gone on, obviously, in the national scene. I mean, we all know the problem with Dominican machines, with the stealing of the election in Georgia and other places, okay? But since the 2010 election, there have been some things that have been set in motion, which I think are important for all of us to hear from someone who's participating in a solution to this election integrity issue that stems from 2020. So that's what I want to do there. Okay. An interesting side note on this is that the secretary did talk to Mike Lindell's physicist last week, and I want him to relate the issues that they talked about. Again, remember, Lindell is, you know, has launched a major national campaign arguing about the steal and how it happened. So we need to delve into that. We need to hear more about that issue from the standpoint of someone who's having to deal with this, who's in charge of our elections. So that's one of the things that I want to try to accomplish today, okay? Now, as far as my normal ranting and raving about our buddies up in D.C., I mean, where do you want to start? I mean, when you really start thinking about what they've done, once again this week, okay, you're looking at inflation, and you say, oh, come on, inflation's not that bad. Well, gas is up 42.1%, okay? I don't know about you, but I had to pay $3.20, if I'm not mistaken. You know, ouch. Last year I'm paying, and you're paying, what, $2.10, something along those lines. And so how do we understand why we're having to pay more for gas? I mean, I understand, you know, the business folks need to make a profit. I got that. But, you know, this whole question of supply and demand is at the heart of this issue right now. And because Biden went ahead and killed the Keystone Pipeline and has essentially shut down other aspects of, quote, production, what do you think happens to the price of gas and other things like natural gas? They're going to go up.
Well, was it intentionally orchestrated?
Well,
or
you
is
see,
he...
No, he's not just stupid, okay? He is stupid, but he's not this stupid, okay? This is stupid with a purpose, okay? And therein lies the problem. He is caught. I don't know if he really believes all this stuff that you have with the climate change, you know, environmentalists, okay? But the reality is, in order to placate them, he has to shut down American production. And at the same time, the hypocrisy of this is that he has to go to the Saudis to produce more to keep the prices down here so that they won't run these people out of D.C. on rail, because no one wants to see what we're having right now, which is exactly what the Trump people were saying was going to happen. Trump brought American production, energy production, up to, we finally got to the point we were energy independent. Nixon talked about this in 1972, because they had just gone through, you know, the first of, no, 73, after the first of the Arab oil shutdowns, okay? Mm-hmm. So you have the situation where all of a sudden it took that long to get energy independent, and Biden shut it down on day one. You know, no more leasing, shut down, you know, Anbar, shut down, or Anwar, excuse me, Anbar is in Iraq, okay.
I'm not going to argue with you, okay. Mr. Professor of Political Science.
Right, right, okay.
Dr. Liu.
Yes, okay, so here we are with this. And so, no surprise, I'm not an economist, but you know what? When you shut the supply down, the demand is still there. Guess what? The prices are going to go up, and that's exactly what's happened. So we've seen, you know, that in oil. I mean, gas, oil is up 42.6. Food's up 4.6. You say, well, 4.6 isn't bad. Really? When's the last time you tried to treat your family to a steak? $10 a pound.
We, most of us mothers and shoppers and cookers will tell you it's more than 4.6%.
Yes, exactly.
It's more than 5.4%.
Right. I mean, so whatever you're buying in the grocery store is costing a whole lot more money.
Yes, a lot
okay?
more.
So at any rate, there's the inflation aspect of this, okay? And as always, you know, I have to talk to you about the border. I mean, this is not just a crisis that has sort of happened. This is a crisis that was deliberately provoked. Deliberately provoked. They want these people. Now you're up to 1.7 million that have come in. We don't even know the ones that have gotten away. Anywhere from 100,000 to 250,000. I mean, those, and once again, look at the number of people who are coming across that are MS-13, that are actually, you know, not from South America or Latin America, but from other countries across the seas. Okay, you don't think the terrorists understand that they can get across this? Yes, okay, but you know what? I mean, when you stop to think about it, here you have Biden going crazy over COVID. Okay, and think about what they're now trying to do. They're forcing people to take a shot or lose their jobs. I mean, that's what's going on. Let me just give you a little side note here. Common Sense, Health Freedom, Alabama, we're all working to stop this. Okay, we're all working to get Ivy to get off her to do something about this, sort of like DeSantis did the other day in Florida. He's having a special session to produce protection for the Florida workers. That's what needs to be done. As a matter of fact, Jim Ziegler is working with lawyers today to try to come up with a lawsuit that will force them to stop what's going on. Now, Airbus is basically saying that they're firing their people on Wednesday. Now, think about this, Lori. I mean, we've got a couple of days basically to react to this. So our argument has been, and I mentioned this last week, if I'm not mistaken, we're trying to force HB 31, which is a bill drafted by Horton, basically to be adopted. That's what's going to happen. It looks like my call is coming in right now. So here again, we're moving in this direction to try to help our people. That's the big issue. And we're going to do this, you know, despite what Biden and them are doing. The fact of the matter is we can stop them if we work together. So Thursday, we're getting buses to go up to Montgomery. We're going to march around Montgomery. We're going to visit with our legislators, make an impact on them. Again, we're running ads today with Jim Ziegler basically saying, call Governor Ivey. Make your voice known that we want HB 31 included in this special session. And we'll see what happens with it. Well, folks, I've completed my rant. And it's now time to welcome our Secretary of State, John Merrill. Good morning, John.
Morning, Doc. How are you?
Well, I'm charged up. Okay,
he's fired up.
Fired up. Talking about Biden and these people, it gets me crazy. So let's bring me down a little bit. Tell me something good about what's going on.
Today be different than any other day.
Yes, right. Here it is. Well, listen, I did mention to everyone this morning. I wanted you to come on to talk about election integrity, and essentially, I'd like to get because you are involved with this. Tell people how you're involved with this at the national level in the jobs that you've been given, and then let's talk a little bit about how this is working out, because everyone is concerned about the battleground states, how those things were messed up. And I know that we've only got a little bit of time, but I'm sure Lori will give me a few extra minutes. See, she's smiling already. So I'm buttering her up for five extra minutes. But at any rate, let's talk about what is going on, your assessment of the problem, and how we're dealing with it.
Well, Doc, you're very, very kind to allow me to come on and talk for a few minutes about something that is so very important to all of us today. I think the first thing that we want to make sure that we hit on is that Alabama has been recognized as the number one nation, the number one state in the nation for election security, integrity, and transparency during the 2020 cycle. Now, that's the first time that's ever happened in the history of the state, and three different entities have recognized us as such. But I think that it's very clear to anyone that's paying attention that there were many, many states in the union that had serious irregularities, inconsistencies, and concerns that were introduced for the administration of their election. One of the things that I felt was incumbent on me to give attention to because of that was back in December of 2020. I was currently, at the time, serving as the national president of the Republican Secretaries of State. So I reached out to the other 27 Republican secretaries and said, look, we need to get together a list of legislation that's been adopted, that's being used in your state, that enhances election integrity. And I asked each secretary to give me 3 to 5 different pieces of legislation that we could use to evaluate where we currently were in their states and how we could introduce it to other states around the union. What I did not know was that there were a number of other efforts ongoing in the Congress and the United States Senate with the Republican National Committee. Make a long story short, Karl Rove had suggested that I lead the national effort to create the National Commission on Election Integrity. And I secured the support of Secretary Trey Hargett in Tennessee, Secretary Laurel Lee in Florida, Secretary Michael Adams in Kentucky, and Secretary Kim Wyman in the state of Washington, who is the only Republican statewide elected official on the entire West Coast. And I asked them to help me put together a list of things that we needed to take to other states related to election security, transparency, and accountability. We also added 50 legislators from around the United States to help us put this effort together. The result was the report from the National Commission on Election Integrity that we introduced in late March, early April of this year. And we had 18 different pieces of legislation that were viewed as best practice legislation that we knew that we could take to every state in the union for them to evaluate and to see how they could improve their administration of the election in their state. But basically, Doc, it had 5 pillars of support. Number one, to empower the states, and that is to make sure that each and every state knew that the power of election administration lies within the boundaries of those states, because we are a democratic republic, and we want to make sure that we were having the power remain with the states like the 10th Amendment to the Constitution said. Number two, we wanted to ensure that our voter rolls are adequately maintained. The most important aspect of election administration is to have secure voter rolls. Now, everybody within the sound of our voices knows that since I've been the secretary, of course, that goes back to January the 19th, 2015, which is 6 years, 9 months, and 6 days ago, we've made a concerted and intentional effort to ensure that each and every eligible U.S. citizen that's a resident of Alabama has been given the opportunity to become a registered voter and obtain a photo ID in our state. And since that time, as of today, we've registered 1,933,528 new voters. We now have 3,609,507 registered voters in Alabama. But as I am very fond of saying whenever I'm in your presence, the thing that you appreciate the most is in that same period of time, we've removed more than 1.35 million people from the voter rolls. And we removed them because they moved away, they passed away, or they've been put away. We do that, Doc, by following state and federal laws that have been adopted. And that's why we have the most secure voter rolls in the nation. Number three, in the area of election administration, we believe that the gold standard for voting is in-person voting on election day. Your listeners would be delighted to know that Alabama led the nation in in-person voting on election day with 87% of our registered voters that participated in the election going to the polls on election day. 87%.
Right.
That makes me very, very proud.
Exactly.
I also think that it's important to know that we require a photo ID, and we think every state in the union should do so. Number four, we believe that if you have a vote-by-mail component, that you should actually require that a copy of your validated photo ID accompany your application if you have an absentee process like Alabama does, and if not, when you return your ballot, that it should accompany your ballot. Last but not least, we believe that it's election day, not election week, not election month, and not an election season. We believe that when the polls close on election day at 7 p.m. local time, that all the votes that have been cast are cast. No other ballots can come in after that time. And we believe that you ought to be able to have your unofficial results in within a short period after that, and then the certification process should take place according to the statutes in your state.
Well, it seems to me like you've identified a program by which you can move in the right direction, okay? Let me just go back to your first one, which is to empower the states to understand their role in this whole process. I know the Democrats have just shot down an attempt to federalize all elections, so thank goodness that happened. But say, let's just say, for instance, the case of Pennsylvania, where you had a Democrat governor, Democrats controlled Supreme Court, Democrat Secretary of State, but you had a Republican legislature. Now, my understanding is that the Constitution of Pennsylvania required any changes in voting procedures to go through a reformation process. That never happened. And so the question of unconstitutional, you know, procedures led, in my view, to a very real problem in Pennsylvania. So, I mean, if that's...
Absolutely, Doc. And I think it also needs to be noted that Kathy Bockbar, who was the Secretary of State in Pennsylvania during the time of the election, did not follow state or federal laws, and that ultimately resulted in her being removed from that position. And that was a good thing, because anytime you have someone that's not following established state or federal laws, that person needs to be dealt with justly according to the statutes that preserve the integrity of that process. The things that I mentioned to you earlier have all been designed to make it easy to vote and hard to cheat. And yet, one of the things that we saw in many states throughout the union, including Pennsylvania, including Michigan, including Nevada, including Arizona, and Wisconsin, and Georgia, was that we had a number of election officials and a number of administrative officials like governors who sacrificed accountability and transparency for accommodation of the ease of participation for the people that voted in that state. And you can never sacrifice security, transparency, or accountability for anything.
Well, listen, I completely agree with you on that. But the argument was, and probably will be, if we're not careful, that the pandemic created a novel situation which required novel solutions. Now, I recognize that Jimmy Carter and others had talked about this in 2005, that these mail-in ballots were an easy way to cheat on elections. And yet, that's exactly what happened. And yet, when I see how we did things, and again, you know, I think it's easy to say mail-in ballots. I mean, when you submit an absentee ballot here, that is a mail-in ballot, but it's a controlled enterprise. So, I mean, let me ask you this. Did all the Alabama ballots come in that were mailed in, were they all classified as absentee ballots so that you were sure that these people were identified? We went through that process so that there was no question that our absentee ballots were, in fact, solid.
No doubt about it, Doc. As a matter of fact, I think it should be noted that prior to this election cycle, the largest number of absentee ballot applications that had ever been submitted and successfully returned was 87,000, and that was in the Obama re-election in 2012. In 2016 and 2008, in the Trump election and then the Obama 1 election, we had 86,000 plus that were successfully returned. This election cycle in 2020, because we enabled all of our voters to indicate a particular reason to vote absentee, which was to check the box that says I'm ill or infirmed and unable to appear at my polling site on election day, we had 331,000 people that used that system to submit an absentee application. 309,000 were successfully received and processed. But each one of those 309,000 met the standard as required according to state law in voting through the absentee process.
Well, that's certainly, you know, good to know. Because as you compare what happened in Georgia, that Stacey Abrams' consent decree basically engineered a coup in Georgia. Now, and I don't think you're going to disagree with me on this, because the issue there was, my understanding of it was that any ballot that came in did not have to be matched against the database for, there was no ID requirement, but the ballot itself should have been sufficient if you had, you know, the right names and all like that. But the fact of the matter is that they did not match those names of those ballots against the database, which, again, to my way of thinking, just lent itself no matter what. But had they at least attempted to try to match the database with these ballots, false as they may have been, it seems like that would have at least prevented some cheating. But John, I don't understand how in the world...
You're correct. And look, the bigger problem in Pennsylvania was that they did not separate the ballots. Any absentee ballots that came in were actually commingled with the other ballots that were voted in person on election day.
And Alito had told them that they had to separate it.
To track down where you've got issues, concerns, or problems that have been introduced, basically what you've done when you co-mingle them is you've eliminated all future opportunities to adequately investigate and seek an indictment and get a conviction on voter fraud activity.
Well, I mean, John, I don't understand how Pennsylvania didn't follow Alito's order. I mean, you would think. So let me just take this one step higher, okay? We've gone through the process. We know some of these issues. We know that there are Republicans who are trying to do good, okay? Is it your sense now that after your report has come out that In fact, would it be possible for you to send me a copy of that report? I just thought about it.
Well, yes, sir.
Okay. But be that as it may, is it your sense now that these Republicans have been emboldened sufficiently by being burned the last time that they will make sure that election integrity is actually going to be maintained?
Well, I certainly hope so, and that is one of the things that we've worked hard on, ensuring that our Republican secretaries know and understand about what the expectation is when it comes to administering the election at the state level.
Right.
You cannot make those accommodations just for the sake of making them. We want everybody to be able to vote, but we want every legal registered voter to be able to vote a legal registered ballot, period.
Right.
That's the bottom line.
Okay. All right. Let's shift a little bit to briefly. I know that you have said that we don't use Dominion voting machines, okay? And I also know that that Dominion has major problems, and it seems to me that once Texas said no to them, I think it was 2018 or 2019, that should have been pretty much a warning to anyone else not to take them, and yet Georgia went ahead and did that in 2019. Now, without getting into a who shot John on this, no pun intended here with your name, okay, but the fact of the matter is that it just seems very odd that Georgia would have gone down that road despite the warnings that were there. What is your sense of that, number one? And number two, is there anything ongoing that is going to essentially, through your committees, make a final determination about whether or not Dominion machines should be used? It seems like a no-brainer to just say they should not be allowed to be used.
Well, Doc, there's a couple things there. Number one is we go back to what we talked about earlier, which is the number one point, the number one pillar in the National Commission on Election Integrity's report, which is that we must empower the state.
Right.
Which means that states need to do what's in the best interest of those states. Now, you would hope that because of the things that have been introduced and the concerns that have been raised related to certain vendors, that people would be more cognizant of what the concerns are and what they need to do related to using certain equipment or certain groups of folks when they are trying to administer their election.
Right.
But I do not think that it's my place to tell any state in the union what they need to do. I will tell you what we did when we were certified, when we were picking our vendors, and then when we were making our information available to our committees that would help us decide who we were going to use, is we put together a report similar to consumer reports where we didn't necessarily rank the individual vendors, but we talked about successes and failures that those vendors had all across the nation in every aspect of the administration of the election, from the tabulator to the electronic poll book to the special election equipment for disabled folks, all of those things that have to be done. And then we said, these are the facts. And then in every instance so far, they've selected the vendor that we would have wanted them to select based on the occurrences that were introduced to them.
Well, listen, I understand that, and I certainly agree that, you know, providing people with adequate information to make a reasonable choice certainly makes sense. But at this juncture, given what we've seen with Dominion and the problems associated with it, and again, we don't have time to get into a lengthy discussion about, you know, whether or not, you know, how susceptible they were to outside interference. I think the basic argument is that's a valid supposition. Therefore, buyer beware. But on the other hand, it seems to me that if that's the basic, you know, outlook about Dominion, why not just come out and say it, that we do not think Dominion should be used at all?
Well, again, yeah, I want to make sure that people understand we don't use Dominion. We're not going to be using Dominion between
right
now and when I leave office in January of 2023. But other states need to decide what's best for them, and I don't think it's my place to tell them what they need to do. I do think it's my place to make sure that they know the concerns that we have about different aspects of election administration and different vendors that are out there that can provide those services. So right. That's what we've done. We're going to continue to do that to make sure that they're fully prepared whenever they get ready to offer an RFP, a request for proposal, or entertain vendors at any time. But I think it is best left up to those states to make those decisions. Now, I do think that legislators and other elected officials in those states should also be informed, not just those people that are in charge of election administration. The more people that are observing what's happened, the less likely for concerns to be introduced at a later time.
I'm not going to argue with this about this. I just think that a red flag needs to be put out there. But let me ask you this. Let's assume for a second that your successor decides to go in the direction of Dominion. What is that process, and how do we, the people, influence that process to make sure it doesn't happen in that direction?
Well, I think the main thing is to understand what takes place whenever a vendor is selected. And in Alabama, we're very open to transparent with our entire process. It's a public process. We make the information available to all interested constituents throughout the state. I hope that that's what other states do, but I'm not sure that it is. Okay. And that's the reason why those people that live in those states need to be aware of when those decisions are being made and what they need to do to take a proactive role in the selection process.
Okay. let me shift to questions about last week's meeting that you had with the pillow guy, Lindell.
Mike Lindell.
Yeah, and again, I'm running out of time, so give me one or two criticisms that they brought to your attention, and tell us your answer to those criticisms.
Sure. One of the things that they introduced last week was that they had some concerns about certain inconsistencies that they saw introduced on our voter rolls. But when they presented those to us, it was easily identifiable that there was no concern. One of those had to do with a entity in Etowah County known as the Big Oak Boys Ranch on the map that they were looking at. Now, what they didn't know is it's not the Big Oak Boys Ranch, it's the Big Oak Ranch. Then it went from Big Oak Boys Ranch to Boys and Girls Ranch. They were concerned that there were 30-plus people that were registered to vote there. Some of those people were female.
Uh-oh. He may have just driven out of our...
Children live there.
Okay.
And
right.
We want to make sure that they know that, yes, there's more than 32 people that live there. It's a multiple family dwelling unit where they take care of people who've been abandoned, children who've been abandoned by their families. And now they're adopted by these families that John Kroll has put together. And then they also introduced apartment complexes, assisted living facilities, and things like that that they didn't really know what was taking place there. So there were no incidences that they introduced with our voter rolls that were not easily refutable without any research being conducted by our office whatsoever. We just simply looked at what they had, and there were no other concerns.
Okay.
They also talked about our election equipment, and as you know, because you've heard me say it multiple times, none of our equipment is connected to the Internet. So you cannot transmit or transfer data, nor can you probe our data or corrupt our data, because it's all air-gapped. There is no system for anybody to interfere with our tabulators or our electronic poll books related to election administration.
Well, that's certainly encouraging to hear. There's no question about that. And I do know that I've invited you and some of your officials to come back down. Supposedly, the physicist from Lindell is going to be here next Monday, and we're trying to work that out. So I will certainly keep you up to date on that. But, John, I really do appreciate you coming on today. I think you offered a very, clear and concise view of how election integrity has worked itself out at a national level, and how you're continuing to make sure the gold standard stays in Alabama. So thank you very much for everything you've been doing. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, Doc. It's always good to be with you. Call me anytime.
Yes, sir. Take care.
Thank
Bye-bye.
You. Secretary of State John Merrill.
Yeah, I mean, Lori, you know, this is a dilemma, okay? Because on the one hand, there are reasonable people who have reasonable criticisms. He's identified a couple here, okay? So my role in this at this point is to make sure that the people that who come to our common sense meetings have a clear understanding of what the criticisms are and what the answers are. He's given three today, and I think it's important because, I mean, people, I saw some of these issues, and I really, you know, we're all concerned. If a group of ballots are coming out of one place, it looks fishy. And then we've seen that in Arizona, where places were, you know, several ballots were coming out of places where no one lived there. I mean, so at any
rate. Right.
So here we are. Lori, once again, I am indebted to you for that extra time, but I think it was worth it.
Yes,
so
it was.
We will see you on the 1st of November, and I'll have another check for you at the end of this week.
Thank you so much.
You all take care. Have a great weekend. Happy Halloween. And we're not doing it on Saturday, I don't think. It should be on
Halloween
Sunday.
Halloween is on the 31st.
There
That's
it
right.
is. Okay, y'all take care. God
Thank
bless.
Thank you so
Bye.
Much. Dr. Lou Campomenosi and the Conservative Watchdog Weekly News Review, brought to you by Spriggs Enterprises, featuring the Shell gas stations in Daphne, and in Malbus, the Shell gas station with the state-of-the-art car wash on 181. If you missed part of the show or you want to tell a friend to listen later, it will be posted on our website, wabf1480.com. Now resuming regular programming.